The following program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
I am Pastor Ernie Sanders, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. My radio broadcast, What's Right, What's Left, is coming up right now.
From Independence, Ohio.
Changed our life for the better in many different ways.
Heard around the world every Monday through Friday.
Pastor Sanders is always years ahead of the rest of the media, telling you exactly what they're covering up.
This is What's Right, What's Left.
I tune in every chance I get to hear exactly what's going on with the voice of the Christian resistance.
Unabashedly cutting through the rhetoric by exposing the hard topics facing our society and world.
A lot of the other news media don't pick up the news items like he does.
And bring into light the enemies of freedom who are out to steal your rights, your children, and enslaving you.
You really get the truth out. I can tune into your show and hear the unvarnished truth. Thank you.
This is What's Right, What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Right, What's Left on this 21st day of February 2023. And tonight we have our producer going the whole mile is none other than Style. Good evening, and way out yonder in the wilderness, we have none other than the parson, Joe Larson.
Not quite a wilderness, but it's kind of remote, and I like it that way. Glad to be with you, boss.
Okay, we got a lot to get to tonight, so we might as well get right into it. And do you remember the title of the message?
Pride, Anxiety, and Worldly Care.
All right, so we're going to go tonight and just read one verse, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 8.
And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work.
Okay, now there are certain words like grace, praise, and thanksgiving that occur over 500 times in the Bible. And so now here, now let's read this again, because some people get this very confused, right? And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, and you are always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. You notice that he uses that word abound twice?
Yes, he does.
Now let me ask you this here. So when he's talking about these things and always having all sufficiency. Now, in this passage of Scripture, verses 9 through 15, talks about giving and about thanksgiving and about where we get the blessings we have, where the blessings come from. And what are these blessings, okay? Are these blessings simply material things?
No, not at all. They encompass a great peace and fellowship, love, you know, a good marriage, family, all kinds of things that aren't in that sense material.
Okay, so it says in every good work. So he's talking about, first of all, God, when he provides sufficiency, what does that mean?
What do you need? He provides you what you need, not what you want, what you need to accomplish what he wants you to do, how he wants you to live.
Okay, so how does that set with the prosperity preaching?
It's kind of the diametrically opposed to prosperity preaching.
Okay,
and
so
it's the total opposite to the liberals out there.
All right. So it says, and God is able, because we're going to move into here talking about pride, you see, because what was the very first sin ever committed?
Adam took and ate from the apple because of his pride.
Mm-hmm. Well, not actually. Who was it that committed the first sin? Who says, I will be like the Most High?
Oh, I see. Going way back. I was thinking, man, yeah, Satan.
Satan Lucifer, committed.
The angel Lucifer who became Satan.
So he committed the first crime, and that crime was, I will be as the Most High. I will sit in the sides of the north, right? So here now, who created Satan?
God created Lucifer, the angel.
So did Lucifer give God the glory for his creation, or did he take it upon himself?
He took it on himself. He was so enamored with his beauty, his power, his intellect, that he just, because of that pride in himself, that he could be the same as God. He could be equal to his creator or greater, which is false.
All right, well, I wanted to just tell you just a couple of things where we're being bombarded about daily in the mainstream media. It pushes the word pride. Now, a lot of times, you know, the word pride is not used in a evil way, but people would be much better off to replace that word pride with blessed. You know, I'm instead of saying, son, I'm so proud of you, say, son, I'm so blessed by you, right?
Right, that would be. But pride means, like, the right kind of pride is pride in doing something well, accomplishing your task. Pride is of getting work done on time. The other kind of pride is a false pride. That's just a
should see, here's the problem with that, and I know it sounds right, but it's not. And let me tell you why that is. Like, okay, say we're proud of getting the work done on time. So what that means is we are responsible for getting the work done on time on our own. But this is what the Bible talks about here. Today, the mainstream media pushes that word pride, especially on the biblically illiterate people, which are oblivious to what God has said. For example, Whoopi Goldberg said she was proud of her abortion. She was proud of her abortion. See, that she had these. Today, you've got, in fact, there's an organization out there called Abortion Pride. Abortion Pride.
Right. There's gay pride. Abortion is proud in our sin, happy with our sin.
Well, you've got abortion pride, you've got black pride, you've got corporate pride, you've got woke pride, you've got ethnic pride, you've got gay pride, like you said, you've got gray pride, where gray pride is seniors, okay, who have, you know, who are proud that they've got wisdom and knowledge, and they're not foolish like so many others out there today. But then you got the proud boys. And then you've got the proud patriots. So you got then you've got American pride. So you say, well, those things can't be bad. Well, what happens is when you use it in such a manner as you're taking full responsibility for whatever good attributes or good accomplishments. Let me give you an example, Joe. Okay, how many people do you know that could have that chose who their parents would be?
I can't think of anyone who chose their parents.
Okay, who do you know that chose their gender?
I can't think of anyone.
Okay, who do you know that chose their intellect?
No one.
Okay,
with their color, sex, size.
What about where we would be born?
No one chooses that.
What about when we would be born?
The only one that knows that is God himself.
Right. So when if we are intelligent, that wasn't something, a gift that we gave ourselves, was it?
No. It was given to us by God.
Yeah, let's go back and look at that verse. And God is able. God is able to make all grace abound toward you, okay? See, God is, but we're not. We're not.
Right.
Okay? We could get sick any time, right?
We could get sick. We could get hurt.
Okay.
It happens all the time. People slip, fall, have car accidents, bike accidents, all kinds of things.
So who keeps us from getting sick at all times? Who keeps us from a lot of this evil?
The Lord does.
The Lord does. You're right. Let's go to Proverbs, Joe. Proverbs chapter 16, and then read me verse 5.
Proverbs 16, verse 5. Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished.
Okay, so now here, let's just take a look at this. There's some things that, in ways that mean, for example, let's just say in warfare, right? Or maybe let's just use, we just had the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
We just had the Super Bowl. Now, when the Super Bowl, when those guys had won the Super Bowl, I saw a number of them right away about, you know, some of them bent down and they praised God right away. They gave the glory to God. Others, they managed to give the glory to their own ability.
To each other, to themselves, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now, so he says that the one, that everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord, though hand in hand it shall not be unpunished. So now let me ask you this. What do you think he means by that hand in hand?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure I understand that correctly.
What happens when they win the Super Bowl? What do the players...
join hands, shake hands, hug each other, join the team together like a team.
They run around slapping each other on the back. They slap hands. They put their hands up, and they call it what, hi-fi?
Yeah, hi-five.
And they slap. So he's telling you, even though you're all doing this together, like you all agree on this, he says that it's not going to go unpunished, right?
Right.
So here, you say, well, gee, you know, what when God punishes people for things, is God most merciful?
Yes, he's okay. Most merciful.
So now, if you and I who understand what we just talked about, if we understand what we did, if we took the credit and took the glory instead of giving it to God, we would be subject to probably pretty harsh punishment, wouldn't we not?
Right. A severe correction of attitude adjustment, we used to call it.
But those guys in that football field, with the exception of a few, really didn't know that. So God takes into consideration their ignorance, that they're not knowingly doing that, offending him, okay? But we knowingly would know that we would offend God, therefore we would be subject to discipline, huh?
Right, as a father corrects his child. He wants us corrected to stay on the right path.
Okay, so here, read verses 18 and 19.
Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud.
All right, so pride, we know, was the primeval sin of Satan. It was the first sin. Pride was the very first sin.
First sin, right.
And we know that better is it to be a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Now, I've often said, we have nothing to be proud of, but everything to be thankful for. And the reason we say that is because whatever good attributes or qualities we have, are not self-made. They come from God, okay? Even when we think we're in control, complete control, we're really not complete control, are we?
You're right. I mean, you look at the team reference, like the sports. God gave each different player on the team different talents, although they're all good athletes. He gave different talents, and then you have the coach who was given different talents and his ability to get the best out of each individual player. But it goes back to who gave the coach that talent, God, who gave individuals one could that say throw well, one can catch well a ball, whether it's football, baseball. Somebody can hit better than others. Some are faster runners. Every different talent, we forget that it all comes together, but God gave every different person all of those talents.
Right, absolutely. And so let's go over to 1 Timothy chapter 3. And
all right.
In 1 Timothy chapter 3, let's read verses 1 through 7.
All right. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, be of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, thus being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil.
All right, so we talked about the primeval sin, which was the sin of pride committed by
right.
the devil. Now, he said, this is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good thing. So let me ask you this. You hear it saying, if a man, does it say if a woman desire the office of a bishop?
No.
Okay.
It like plainly says man.
So it says man and it says he, huh?
Okay. Says he, yeah.
A bishop, which is a what, episcopo, or a bishop is also...
Presbyter, a pastor, a parson.
Yeah, and or it can be an elder, too.
An elder, yeah.
So a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober of good behavior, given to hospitality, and apt to... Teach. So he's making a couple points. Is blameless the same as sinless?
No. Definitely
so.
Not. We are sinners saved by grace. And the thing is, we have to know that when we sin, we have to go back every time we sin and ask for forgiveness. We're continually covered by the blood of the Lamb, but we're just still sinners, but saved by grace.
Okay. You're very right. You're very right. So he says here, the husband of one wife. Let me ask you this, okay. When this was written, if you were a wife, you would have had to have been what gender?
Female.
Female, right. See, now, you see, I'm going to say something because a lot of people still don't understand this. There are still only two genders. God only made two genders. He only made two. Okay.
Right.
And to this very day,
you know, he made them. Yeah.
To this very day, to this very moment, there's only two. You say like, so these guys that go in and decide they want to be a woman and they have this surgery done, okay, they're not women. They're mutilated men, aren't they?
Exactly. They're just men that have been castrated.
And so these women who want to become men and cut off their breasts and all that, they're not men. They're simply mutilated women, aren't they?
Exactly.
Okay.
So we've got a story we can do to back that up later on.
Alrighty. Not given to wine, no striker, not greedy or filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, and not covetous. So when he says not given to wine, what do you think he means by that?
Not a drinker, not a wine bibber. In Scripture, it uses wine bibber, somebody that drinks.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean you can't ever have a glass of wine, because Scripture also said wine is for the older people for health purposes. But those who go around and drink socially and always drinking at parties, that kind of thing, is forbidden.
So would a glass of wine, say, you have if it would help you to sleep, say, all things in moderation, would that be acceptable?
I think it would, yes, the way I read it. Like if you were recovering or something, quite often you've had a blood issue, they'll tell you to drink some wine to help replenish your blood.
All righty. But now, when, you know, and I was in a prison ministry for 45 years, up there on death row all those years, too, of ministry. And every single inmate that were in there, except for one, so I can only remember one up there that was not either on alcohol or drugs or both when they committed their crime. Every other single one was either drinking or on drugs or doing both, okay? And what do they call alcohol up there? They call it ignorant oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but they didn't do it in moderation, did they?
No.
Okay. So one ruleth his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. So we this is very clear whenever we hear if a man, him, his, and his wife, okay? So there's no doubt here he's talking about that only men, can be.
Sometimes man means mankind, but not in this case when he continually, man, husband, you know, father, he's explaining it in detail. He means the male of the species. He's not talking as mankind, man and woman, as humankind. It's quite clear.
Sometimes, right, but here now he's talking about. It's very clear that he's talking about a man who's the head of the house.
Right.
For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Why would that be important?
In which sense of the word?
What is one of the major...
If you can't control your own wife, your own children, your life's in a total mess, how can you, you know, advise others and run a church?
Well, one of the major...
You can't be an example for...
One of the major duties of a pastor is to do marriage and family counseling, huh?
Right.
Okay, now, where he's not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, uh-oh, here's that word, that he fall into condemnation of the devil, okay? So now here we go again. Not a novice, being lifted up with pride, or he fall in the condemnation of the devil. So, again, it goes back to the very first sin, and that was the sin of pride, huh?
Pride. Well, it's explained if you're just a milk drinker, if you're new, anyone who's new to anything is going to make mistakes. And the first thing is when we were young, even in the military, you pass a certain test, you get a rank. The pride is real easy to come by because you're green, you're new, and you don't understand things very well. And it's just saying even a young pastor is more vulnerable than somebody that's been around for a while.
Right. And so
you've had your failures, you run into situations where you don't always have all the answers. You know you've got to keep going back to God and going back to the Scripture, and you can't, you know, quite often you have to call fellow pastors or teachers to, you know, ask questions. How do you see this? You know, what would you do? You have to realize you don't have all the answers. You don't know it all.
Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. The snare of the devil, okay? So, again, he's referring to that very same thing as pride there.
Pride, right.
Okay, and so here...
Because that's what snares... Well, pastors, from what I've heard this all my life from different, especially women who were in the ministry. When I was with the ministry, you were doing the crisis pregnancy center, maternity homes. There were a lot of women counselors, and they say pastors had like three main things that they saw them always fall into. Often was temptation with women, pride, and into drinking for some reason were like the three things that seemed to always bring them down.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're going to go to a break. Then when we come back, I'm going to play a little clip. And this clip is of a high school student who addresses the school board. And for a young fella, he has, well, he's got a good head on his shoulders. And he's just telling it the way it is. And he's got the respect of all the rest of his students because most of them said they would want to do what he was doing, but they were afraid they would be expelled from school if they did so. So here now, it's this. Well, we'll play this right after the break. We'll be back right after this.
Well, there's people on the left and people on the right, and there's people that's in between. You better hope you're right when you leave this life and bow before the King of Kings. Bow before the King of Kings.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song, but on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong.
They say no one murdered more than Hitler did. Most people would say that's true. But over 50 million babies that were never born might disagree with you. Yeah, they might disagree with you.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song. But on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong. We got a right to feel the way we feel. We got a right to make a stand. And I'm proud to say on my wedding day that my was not a man,
a great big ugly man.
Some say I'm a little bit too far right when I write and sing my song, but on Judgment Day before God's throne, I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong. Thank God I'm saved on Judgment Day. I'd rather be right than wrong. Lord, I'd rather be right than wrong.
Back, and that was Julie Daner. That was my old buddy Danny Ray. And yours truly, old Pastor Ernie. And that song was written by Danny Ray. And so we're going to listen to a young fellow for a high school kid. He's pretty smart. We need more like this with common sense today, because common sense is it is not very common in our society. So take it away, their style.
Hi, my name is Brad Taylor, and I just finished my freshman year at RHS. I've been a part of District 196 schools now for 10 years. And I'm going to give you a glimpse today of what's actually going on inside these schools. Despite the board's attempt to deny it, District 196 schools are quickly becoming a place where promoting activism is actually more important than promoting education. I'll take you back to my first day at RHS this fall. The principal came out and gave us a heartfelt speech about equality and standing together. He began to list countless races, such as Latino, Asian, expressing how much they matter and how important they are. But never once did he mention a race or identity that reflects me, or half the kids that were in the class. Now, members of the board, I know you haven't been to school in a while, and I know most of the I know none of you, or most of you, don't have any kids left in the school district. But you must admit how uncomfortable it will be to be characterized just by your skin color on the first day of school, and be thought that you were wrong just because of your skin color. So I'll never forget the look one of my friends gave me from across the room as we were sitting there listening to this blatant bias being expressed in the so-called equity statement by the leader of our school. To be clear, I don't need you to tell me that I matter, but hearing the condolences given to other races and leaving just one race out, it inevitably you'll start to feel like you've done something wrong. And in our principal's attempt to unify us, he instead created unwarranted boundaries and barriers between his students, pitting us against each other based on characteristics that we can't control. In another separate instance, I was told that writing "All Lives Matter" on the whiteboard was political and could be seen as offensive. When I questioned the teacher after class, she told me that she didn't have an answer and she just had to erase it, and it was quickly erased. There are political signs all over RHS about specific races that matter, specific sexual orientations that matter, and specific perspectives that matter. But when I questioned the RHS administration about how these signs were political, they told me that they were supporting human rights. So when I questioned why the equity statement couldn't represent all students, they told me that to even ask that question was outlandish and offensive. And when I asked why that was, they told me, quote, "whites have a pretty good situation right now," unquote. So is that not racism? Disregarding my question merely because of the color of my skin. To be honest, after enduring a year of the people in charge telling me that I'm a racist and I'm privileged and pointing out our irreversible differences, I've never noticed race more. And it's becoming the first thing I notice when I meet someone, which has never before been the case. RHS administration confidently told me that RHS students and staff are happy with their equity statement. But from my experience in talking with other students, this is not the case. I know many kids who disagree with their teachers, but they're too scared to stand up because they're worried that their grades will be docked and their learning experience will be affected. My honors government teacher, I'm not going to say his name, but he's mentioned that Democrats care more about all people while Republicans only care about themselves. And he's also inferred to us that socialism is better than democracy. He even had a statue of a socialist leader in his classroom. I've been told by a lot of kids that they just stay silent and adjust their schoolwork to reflect an acceptable opinion to secure a good grade. I've been approached by multiple teachers who have told me in private that they just want to say that they agree with me and they support me standing up, but they can't say it in front of the class for fear of being disciplined by the administration in some way or losing their jobs. There is clearly only one way to think in this district, and that is that they are teaching their kids to shut up if they don't agree. Now, members of the board, I want you to take a good look at yourselves in the mirror tonight and ask, are you really standing up for the equality of all people, or are you just pushing a damaging political ideology on our students? A fellow coworker at my job, who, by the way, is of color, discreetly told me that the school seemed to be pushing a very leftist agenda in class. This proved that not everyone is happy with your school, and not everyone who isn't happy is white. Now, due to all these instances I've mentioned and many more that I can't fit in this five-minute speech, I have decided to leave this district and continue school on a private Christian school online. And there will be sacrifices, and I will not get to walk in the graduation ceremony or attend milestones at RHS, but I will be able to learn in an environment that is not intent on punishing me daily for my skin color and political views. Now, regardless of how you take my speech, whether you just shrug it off as malarkey or Fox News talking points, I encourage you to think about it, because someday I'm going to be a leader. I may be the president, a governor, or just a professional golfer, but I will never stop believing that everybody has value, no matter their skin color or personal beliefs, and it's a shame that you're not going to be able to say that I was an alumni of RHS in District 196. Thank you.
All righty. There you go. Now, that was at a high school in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Kind of a liberal area, huh? And there you had a woke school district. Now, this program, that speech was just played all through Minneapolis, Minnesota tonight, because we're on a big station right there. And so many, many people out there listened to that. And did you hear the kids cheering him when he talked about, you know, leaving there and going to another school, okay, getting out. A lot of them, those very same kids, the ones that that cheered Joe when he talked about how he was being persecuted for his skin color. A lot of those kids in that school, they had come forward and said, you know what, we agree with you, but we're afraid to say anything because it awoken us. We'll be discriminated against if we do that.
Now, and it sounded like the whole audience was, most of the whole audience was applauding. So,
yeah, it was.
The feelings were sincere.
Yeah, the kids has had enough wokeness there in the high school. And so, anyhow, very good. But that's the boy had common sense, and common sense is not allowed today in those public schools. So you have wokeism as the official religion of the NEA. And so here this, you know, and guess what's happening? Over a million people, over a million children were pulled out of the public schools in America last year and put into private Christian schools. Over a million, just last year. And so that's continuing. People are pulling their kids out because the parents are finding out. But one good thing that happened was a number of school boards were taken over by conservatives, which. It's going to make a difference, and the old NEA does not like that a bit, not at all. All right, tell us what you have there for us.
Well, going right along with that clip, Stephen Moore was a economist with Ronald Reagan, and he's quite a commentator. And he's got an article out on worldnewsdaily.com. It's now or never for school choice everywhere. And to kind of sum it up, he talked about the 55 Chicago schools where no students were proficient in math, reading. He talked about in Baltimore, Maryland, there were 23 schools without a single student proficient in math. And he goes on and said there in Baltimore, they spend $21,000 a year a student. In Chicago, they spend $30,000 a year on a student. And he's going on in the article talking about different schools. Think about that. Chicago schools, $30,000 a child for children that can't read at grade level, can't do arithmetic, can't do math.
And yeah, but they can shoot.
They can shoot. They know about white privilege and wokeness and CRT and all this stuff. Anyway,
fentanyl.
He's talking about, he calls educational child abuse, and he points out what you and I have been saying for many, 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 many years. All across the country, our public school system, they're delivering failing results. And he's pointing out that the teachers' unions are trying to say it's because of COVID. Well, he points out the scores were horrible in these same schools before COVID. In fact, there is some of them, you know, they weren't much better than they are now, even with all the problems with COVID. And he goes,
Joe, there was a specific time, there was a specific time, a specific year when they started on a decline. And that specific year, America was number one scholastically in the entire world. We were number one, uno, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And something happened in 1962, and from that time on, the grades went completely down. What was it?
62 would be, I'm thinking abortion?
No. That was 73.
Madeline O'Hare. Mary O'Hare, yeah.
She got a really crooked court. She found a crooked court. And they had expelled God from the public school system. And the door was left open. And who came in?
Satan.
All right. You got her.
Satan. We know that here Steve Moore talks about 40 years ago, a famous study on the condition of our schools warned a crisis of mediocrity. And one of my mentors was Pastor John Stormer, who way back wrote a book they called None Dare Call It Education.
I knew John.
He was quite a guy. He wrote None Dare Call It Treason about our loss of freedoms. And you know, there were people like you speaking out, John Stormer and others. So what we're getting here, folks, long story short, University of Chicago economists that our loss of education from, you know, what's happened will cost our nation trillions of dollars of lost income, productivity from the diminished earning potential of the children. And we're wasting these minds. We've gone down to our schools, the best in the world, and now some of the worst. We've got third world nations that are far ahead of us in education. We are worse than most third world banana republics, folks. And we're spending all this money on nothing. So there are thousands of private religious schools out there that have proven they can teach children. In fact, I think some of the Catholic private schools are some of the highest scoring in the nation. Some of the private schools, they have students achieving, you know, proficiency in math and science and reading. They're right up there where they should be. They're reaching 100%. And he said, education reform is simple. We put our children, our nation's greatest asset, in these schools. And what are these schools? School choice. Christian school, homeschool, you know, there are many different choices, and it's so simple. Abolish the Department of Education, give the parents the money. They put their children in the school of their choice. If they want them in a religious school, if they want them in a private school, you know, whatever they want to do, homeschool, put the money with the child, and we get rid of this horrible teachers' union. Now, everybody talks about, remember, oh, COVID caused all this problem with our children. I think, Pastor, the teachers' union could see how poorly the schools were doing a couple of years back. They knew they were failing. The test scores were horrible. They're, like I said, they're almost as bad as they are right now. And I think they wanted to pull the children out of the school system so they would have an excuse. They could say, look, this is what caused the decline in education. Because of the COVID, our children didn't learn, blah, blah. I think they just used that as an excuse to cover up their horrible, dismal failure.
It's not a failure. They didn't fail, John or Joe. You say their intention was not to educate but to indoctrinate the children. They did not fail at what they were doing. They were very successful, okay,
But they failed at reading, writing, and arithmetic that the parents wanted. In that sense, they did both. They achieved their goal, but they also could not achieve their goal and keep the children educated at the same time, could they?
Their goal was never to keep the children educated. Their goal was to reduce the children and reduce this country to third world status. That was their goal. Right. That was they said in there. Right. Scholastically, but morally.
Yeah.
Right. Morally, yeah.
Exactly. You go back, 1934, the NEA said the purpose of education in America was the socialization of the child.
Right.
Not the education. The socialization of the child was the mission and purpose of the American public school system. That told you something right there. It was a warning. What they were intending, socialize them into what? A socialist democratic state.
Absolutely. And so this is why back in the early 1970s, a lady named Martha Lippitt had contacted me, and she was a public school teacher. She had a one-room schoolhouse, Joe, with the Ten Commandments on the wall, the Bible on her desk. And wouldn't you know, one of the parents in that little bitty schoolroom decided to call the ACLU because she had the Ten Commandments, okay? And they got after her. She called me, and we started promoting, right then, we started promoting homeschooling. And at that time, there was no homeschooling in Ohio, none that you could find. And we started promoting the homeschooling, and guess what? Today, it took off, and Ohio is one of the lead homeschooling states in the entire country. And but homeschooling is growing all over the United States. Homeschooling every year is getting bigger. And so is every day three new Christian schools in this country open. Now, some
right
clothes,
now,
too.
That bill, we talked about H.R. 899. That was Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky, and he's got about 20 co-sponsors on this bill. And this bill would what? The Department of Education shall terminate on December 31, 2023. So, folks out there, you can call your Congress critter, your senators, tell them, you know, you want H.R. 899, the get rid of the Department of Ed bill. The government has no business in education. You go look at the Constitution. Education was given to the states. It made it very clear it was not a duty of the federal government. It was one of the duties given to the state governments, to the locals, you know, the government closest to the people. So it's one of those things that's unconstitutional. It costs a lot of money, and it's more destructive than it's beneficial. Get rid of it. It'll help your budget, your taxes, and it'll help save your children. So,
Ronald Reagan wanted to. Yeah, Ronald Reagan wanted to get rid of it, but Bill Bennett fought him. Okay, they fought him on it. He wanted to get rid of the, and I believe also Donald Trump wanted to get rid of the Department of Education, and so.
Yeah, I think he had a couple of things he would have liked, but he was—he waded in and found out the swamp was so much deeper and broader than he thought.
Yeah.
And they kind of buried him. But he had several good ideas that we should continue to follow. Well, like, for example, education. Here's one more I want to throw in real quick. Marymount is an old college, liberal arts. The true, back in the old days, liberal arts meant a general broad education. And they have announced, the faculty has announced to the students that at Marymount there in Virginia is going to eliminate bachelor's degree in, one, religious studies. It used to be a religious school. Philosophy, math, art, history, theology, sociology, economics, and secondary education. So wait a minute, you're getting rid of STEM, math, economics, history. This is one of the really great colleges, and they said they want to relocate resources from these programs to others that better serve our students and reflect their interests. Now, constitutional scholar Jonathan Turley has come out. He is just going nuts over this. He's saying this is wrong in so many ways, and there's about two pages of what he has to say about this. But this is irresponsible. It's like saying we're going to solve the problem of low attendance at church by stopping Sunday morning service. You know, right, Pastor? You're not gonna fix low church attendance by cutting out church services. It isn't going to happen. What we need to do is tell people why they have to have these courses. We have to bring back, standards and reward, people that all the schools across America, they're cutting out right and left any of the advanced, with the smart kids where they put them ahead. Can't think of the word. They're stopping because they want equity. They want equal results. So all honor classes across the country are one at a time being taken out of the school system. So the bright kids are sitting there bored stiff. When you got a bright child that's bored stiff, they're going to find something to get into. And quite often it's something that's not good for them. It's usually trouble. And so everything that the school system is doing is being destructive to your children, your grandchildren, and the only people that can put a halt to this horrible let the devil educate your children is you, right? The American people, the only ones that can put a stop to this, and they need to do it now.
Well, I mean, don't they have to care for their children? I mean, don't they have to really care for the well-being of their children to be able to do that? Because it's apparent.
Maybe sacrifice, maybe have to get out and do all kinds of things to make this happen, yes. But who was it? Ronald Reagan said the philosophy of education in the classroom in one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next. We are having this woke, hate-filled generation, these kids that believe in transgenderism, white privilege, you know, all this garbage they're teaching them, you know, that babies are born knowing, you know, the, if they're bisexual, trisexual, asexual at birth. This is going to be the people that run the country when you're old and in a retirement home. Yeah, there's something very wrong with this picture, right?
Well, there is, but there's two things that are happening. There's a division. It's coming now. A lot of the young people, this is why you're seeing more and more Christian schools opening, but not just Christian, but even secular conservative schools that are opening. And it's causing a huge divide because these children that have become woke, that have indoctrinated into wokeism, they have a very high rate of suicide. You don't hear about that, okay? Because
no, of course they keep that quiet. Yep.
Yeah, they're so confused, but you've had the inmates are running the asylum with these. With public education, where they've gotten into Harvard and Yale and these colleges, but that too, they're having a major battle within that system now too. Their people are starting to rebel, and what's happening is these people that are going to these universities, you know, and coming out with thinking that, well, I'm just the greatest. I just graduated, and while it's happening. People are laughing at them. They're laughing at them because they're saying such stupid things. You know, when they're telling you that they don't know what a woman is, or that that boys, men can have babies. And when they're saying such stupid things like this, you got two places you can go: either into the mainstream media, where they've totally lost their minds, or you can go into the Democratic Party Congress, where You've totally lost your mind. And now that Nancy Pelosi is gone, she doesn't have a higher iron grip on the Democrats. Some of them starting to jump ship and saying, you know what, we look pretty foolish. We really do look pretty foolish. And maybe we should, you know, kind of back off and try to get in touch with reality again, because people are laughing at us, okay?
Yeah. Well, you and I are, you know, we've been around the block a couple times at kind of the good old days. Remember when, you know, we knew the difference between right and wrong. We knew what the Ten Commandments were. We knew the difference between morality and immorality. We knew the difference between boys and girls. We were taught what people were supposed to be judged on the content of their character, their, you know, what they were as a real person, what they were like. Not on what sex or skin color or anything. Pedophiles were people that were put in jail, not paraded, you know, paraded around on stages and held up as role models. When, you know, the policemen were your friend. We came from a different world. Those old TV shows, Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best. Life was a lot nicer, kinder, gentler back when we were young. And I just regret that my grandchildren can't see that kind of world.
Joe, we're coming up to a break. And so when we come back from that break, we're going to have a clip, a very interesting one. So we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. More to come.
Fight the fight.
Thank you for listening to What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance. To support this ministry, head to WRWL.org. That's WRWL.org. Mail your donations to What's Right, What's Left Ministries, 14781 Sperry Road, Newberry, Ohio, 44065. If you missed part of tonight's program, you can check out the podcast at thewordcleveland.com. TheWordCleveland.com. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting What's Right, What's Left Ministries, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. The second hour is coming up next.